It was, I think, less than 1 year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you are now here.
Yeah, it's a small world.
So this is a day of science today. We have all tonight some nice events and come to here. You see the topic and please. Yeah. I have another overlapping things. I will come in 10 minutes back.
No problem. Yeah. No problem.
So, thank you so much for Professor Nathan Mackie for opened the Agora Forum for us here. And actually, it's a great honor to have Zach Shalby in UMass Kula, though he had already some connections to us through Innocas, at least. And he visited the town occasionally before, but I think this is his first proper stay in UMass.
Say that, yeah.
Say like that.
Yeah.
And I'm also so happy that people from education technology, from teacher education and technology, and many parts of the university are represented today, because actually this talk and this introduction to Microbit could also serve as a kind of a call for looking for connections that how we might want to contribute to the Microbit story from University of UMass Kula side. So as Microbit is an international foundation running global activities all over the world, they always need a huge crowd of researchers to work for these projects, and it's also a good opportunity for us that maybe I don't tell you a secret if I tell that Zach is living in Finland, so he's quite easy to reach here. So it's I see it as a good potential to think about future cooperations. And there is another reason why Zach is visiting us today. It's called the Researchers' Night, Tutkijoiden yö, as many of you already involved in this story too. So we just had a project finish or a closing event for this Kids Inspiring Kids in STEAM project of ours. And Zach was maybe one of the oldest kid among the kids to inspire other kids. They were kids from UMass Kula who were led Microbit workshops for other kids. So for school children whom they never met before. And there were several other parallel workshops run by children for children. And I felt that it was on a way a successful start of the day. And I think it will just continue like that all over this researchers' night. What I have to do is to hand over you a little summary about this project, and I give the floor to Zach to tell us about Microbit.
So I'm not going to speak too long. I'll give a chance for you to ask questions as well, and maybe have a little discussion about technology and education, and what's our role as engineers and industry, that's where I come from, as scientists, so many of you, as researchers from the university, or as teachers, what's our role in the next generation when it comes to technology? I have my own opinions, but I'd love to hear yours after this as well. So as Christoph very friendly introduced me, I'm a little bit of a weird guy in Finland because olen maahanmuuttaja, mamu, niin sanottu. Mä oon jenkki, niin kuin suomalainen, eli syntynyt Yhdysvalloissa ja sitten asunut 21 vuotta niin kuin Suomessa, Oulussa ensin opiskelijana ja jatko-opiskelijana, ja sitten Sotkamo Vuokatissa, missä mulla on nykyään talo ja maatilaa ja niin kuin oma perhe. So I'm just saying for those of you that don't speak Finnish that I am American who's been in Finland for 21 years. So basically my entire adult life has been in Finland. And I have a family in Sotkamo Vuokatti. It's very well known for skiing. I'm a skier, outdoor person. So if you're ever in Vuokatti area, there's a good excuse to come find me and meet up. And that also influences my view on innovation, my view on entrepreneurship, and on education, because as many of us who come from different backgrounds know, it's always a strength to have different angles of experience with education that you can then apply later on. My own start with education and the reason I do this, the reason I'm the founder and CEO of the Microbit Foundation, is that as a child in rural Michigan, I came from the countryside in northern Michigan. It's even more remote than Finland, if you can even imagine that. So there isn't even a railway to where I'm from. It's only forest, a couple roads, and a small town on a lake, and that's it. It's very, very remote. For Canadians, I'm from a remote place even, which is fun. But it means there's no technology opportunities in that part of the countryside. It's the same in Finland in some sense. Really have a lot of opportunities to get connected with technology. But I got lucky. I had a father who happened to pass me down a Commodore 64. That was the old days of computing. I don't know who's the generation that grew up with a Commodore 64. Some of us, right? I'm from that generation too. I got lucky. I happened to have a father who had a company and just had an extra computer, and I got to start my journey as an engineer at the age of 8, experimenting with technology, creating my own games and programs, and eventually my own electronics in my back shed of my house, building my own radios and things. It was my hobby. And my own experience is that through being exposed to that type of really modern, you know, cutting-edge technology at a very young age, it became my hobby and passion, and through that, I was able to become one of the leading internet engineers and experts in the world through that experience, right? It never would have happened if I would have just gone to school and took the courses that they wanted me to take, gone to university as they wanted me to. I wouldn't have become what I am. So for me, right, I feel like having been successful in my career in industry, as a research scientist as well in Finland, that the way that I can give back to today's younger generations is by trying to give them the same kind of experience that I had when I was 8, which is just getting exposed to a tool that let me create. It let me have that digital experience or creation experience, right? Where I said, wow, I made this, and it worked, right? And I think if every child gets that exposure to creation with technology, we'll have a much more positive view on technology in general. It doesn't matter if they ever become a scientist or an engineer. They can become a nurse, a teacher, a doctor, and still having that confidence with technology gives them a bigger cutting-edge advantage in the modern world. So that's my hope, right? We can help inspire a whole generation of innovators by getting teachers and students the right tools that they can use in education. And I'll tell you the story of this, how we started doing this, what we're doing today, how's it going, and then what we're doing in Finland, which is really interesting. So this all starts back in the 1980s, actually, in the UK. Now, I'm not from the UK, but I have a long history of doing things with the UK just through the industry that I come from. In 1981, the BBC came out with a computer for people called the BBC Micro. This is exactly the same thing as a Commodore 64 in the UK. And this was created to help teach people about personal computers. There wasn't any skill sets in personal computing in the 80s for private citizens. It's a very specialized task to use a computer. And this had a big effect on computing in the UK. Now, it never really caught on outside the UK. The BBC Micro wasn't a commercial success. It was more of a public service project. The Commodore 64 is what really took off. 35 years later, the BBC came back 3 years ago and looked at, well, what do we need to bring digital skills to young people again? They felt that even though, yeah, we have a world full of technology, young people in the UK were falling behind. Most young people didn't get exposure to really using and creating things with technology during their studies. Yeah, they had a computer here and there. Yes, they learned to use a mobile phone. But that's not creating with technology. That's just using. And something really interesting came out of this. In 2015, the BBC decided to create a little computer called the BBC Microbit, which was designed with psychologists, with teaching professionals, with user experience experts, not with engineers. Engineers weren't running this project. To create something that would really provide that digital creation experience for young children who have no technical background, right? No intention of becoming nerdy, no interest in Minecraft ahead of time. Exactly the kids that usually stay away from technology. And their teachers. So particularly, this is meant to be very friendly for teachers. And the reason that it was aimed at school was because the goals behind this project by the BBC were to bring disadvantaged children in contact with technology. So kids from the countryside who otherwise wouldn't use it, kids from poor families who might not get the support to use it, and girls. So in the UK, only 9% of STEM careers are filled by women. 9. It's really low. So they had a really big challenge of how to get girls interested in STEM careers. Well, the end result was something that became really successful with that target group. So primary and secondary aged kids and their teachers in the UK really got attached to this. It became a real success in the trials that we did in the UK. And it was decided to turn it into a national project. So in 2016, we deployed nearly 1 million of these devices to every single seventh grade child in the UK. It's a big country, so it's the first time, I think, a piece of technology like this has been introduced into an entire school system where we allowed kids to actually go in and create technology, robots, games, sensing their environment, art projects, music projects, you name it. I'll tell more about what we can do with this.
Did you choose these seventh graders by yourself, or did they?
So the reason that grade 7 was chosen by the BBC team was because that's where the computer science curriculum was introduced into the UK school system. In 2015, it was decided that they would introduce CS into schools, and it started at grade 7. Otherwise, the natural place for this would normally be starting in primary school. It would normally start at grade 3 or even 2 or 1. That's kind of the natural starting point. And then when you get into secondary school, you tend to do more advanced projects with this. Now, it started out as a project. This was purely a BBC project. We had a lot of technology partners. The company I worked for, Arm, Arm designs these chips that go in embedded devices and phones. It's called the Arm architecture. I was working for Arm back in those days when this project was starting. And we were one of the partners helping to build the technology for the BBC. When the project was done, it was decided by all the partners that we needed to turn this into something that could be used by schools and education professionals anywhere in the world, developing countries as well as developed countries. And so this was spun off as a nonprofit organization. I was brought on to found and run the organization from California, so I was based in California at this time. And I put together a team to go and build Microbit into an international thing rather than just a UK thing. And that was a year ago, just over a year ago, that we started the Microbit Foundation. So we're a normal nonprofit organization headquartered out of London, but we have myself based out of Finland, I have people based out of Texas in the US, and we're adding people in India, in China, Hong Kong, so different parts of the world, to go and help bring Microbit to those areas. Now, something I think is important as a technologist, I'm a technologist, I create complex technology in my career, is to remember that we adults like to think we know what technology is going to be in the future. We always have this pipe dream of being a sci-fi author. Who would love to be a sci-fi author? I would. I know what technology is going to be like. It's going to be like this, right? We're all wrong, mostly, right? And the reason we're wrong, right? Most of what was in Back to the Future didn't really happen. We didn't have cars using trash for nuclear fusion generated power. We didn't have hoverboards that just magically floated in the air, nor many other things, not to mention time travel. We did have self-lacing shoes, right? But that was just because Nike had to keep up with the film many years later and create them. We shouldn't try to assume what technology will be like in the future for kids today. The technology that I grew up and what turned me into an engineering professional isn't used today any longer. The processor architecture is extinct. The programming language is extinct. The storage technology is extinct. The networking technology is very extinct, right? None of that's used any longer. The electronics that I grew up creating are extinct. But yet, those skills that I picked up by creating with technology, learning about digital thinking, computational thinking, algorithms, problem solving, right? Debugging, architecture, all of those skills have stayed with me in my entire career. And I can apply them today to the most modern technology that we have. So what we have to remember is that, yes, technology will be very different in the future. It's not us who will decide what the technology is 20 years from now. We'll be close to retired, many of us. It's our kids that are going to design the technology in the future. So what we have to be careful of is not trying to give them just a solution for today. So I hear many times in the media, right, or on Twitter, in conversations around even Microbit that we do, that, oh, we need to teach kids coding. Coding's important, right? Let's teach them a programming language. That they'll use that for the rest of their lives. And I say, that's not true. It doesn't matter what programming language we teach kids, because programming languages will be extinct in the future. I can tell you right now, in 10, 15 years, you won't be programming a computer. You'll be training a computer. Computers will be AIs. Our job will be to actually train the AI to do what we want. So we'll become trainers of computers, just like teachers train kids today or train other teachers. And that's going to be an interesting change in how we use technology. So we shouldn't get too caught up in exactly what we're teaching. We should very much focus on the skill sets that we're teaching kids around technology and make it a natural part of their experience. Now, my own vision for the world, just thinking about this, where the future is going to be, is that every child in the future will be an inventor, right? Technology is already so commonplace. Everybody in the developed world has access to a mobile phone, which is basically a supercomputer. We have access to high-speed internet everywhere. The cost of electronics has gone down considerably. We're able to make these, what in Commodore 64 standards is basically a supercomputer, for 15 euros for schools to use, right? Extremely cheap, whereas in the old days, this would have cost thousands of euros to make. Cloud computing technology is getting cheaper. AI is getting cheaper all the time as we speak now. So the technology is accessible. Children are going to have to use technology to apply it to their everyday life in the future, no matter what their profession is. It doesn't matter if they're in STEM or not. So sometimes we talk about STEM, but actually we should be talking about everyone. Yes, some people have to be the scientists and engineers, but doctors and teachers will have to use technology to create their own solutions just as much. So that's my vision, and that's what we're driven by with what we do with Microbit. We're trying to help enable this to happen in the future. Now, the great thing about having a national deployment of a technology in a school system is we can also do a lot of research. So something we're quite focused on in the UK is collaborating with research organizations. We do very widespread survey-based research. So we've done surveys with teachers in schools. We've done surveys with kids in school and out of school. And we've also done our research studies in different, using different methodologies. So not just survey-based research, but experimental research with kids in classrooms. So King's College, for example, has done that quite a bit. Trying to figure out, does this actually have any kind of impact on the behavior of students or teachers? And what we've seen so far is yes, actually has a surprisingly large impact when it's used in a classroom setting. So one of the interesting things that we saw is that almost all students, 90%, felt that just by using this and getting a little bit of a coding experience, they felt that, yeah, anybody can do this. You know how kids can get pretty, somebody was telling me that their 13-year-old had decided that, yeah, I've done coding, I know everything, right? You get that sometimes in secondary school. But at the same time, you get a lot of kids who would never think coding's possible, let alone that they can do it. So we're having a big impact in changing the attitudes towards computing and coding for young kids in the UK. That's good. But more importantly, we've had an actual impact on girls, which is really interesting. So we had a 70% increase in the number of girls who said they were interested to take more computing studies in the future. And that's a drastic increase. We didn't see that increase with boys. Small amount, but basically the boys that were going to do computing in the future were already going to do it. We got a few more interested who might have been on the border, but a real impact on girls. And we're interested. We're starting to do studies in other countries. In Croatia, we have another national rollout. We've done similar survey-based research. And the results are similar, even a bit higher, I think, because the computing skill level in Croatia was even lower than in the UK to start with. So they had a larger impact. And we're going to do the same in Finland. And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of impacts we have in Finland as well. And a lot more research like this. We've done a lot of survey-based questions and studies. Another interesting thing that popped out for me was that we saw an increase in the confidence level of teachers after using something like this. So by making this easy for kids, 8-year-olds can use this without really much help from the teacher, that showed teachers that actually this is not that hard. So 50% of teachers said that this increased their confidence level in using technology in the classroom, and especially the teachers that were unconfident to start with. So that was another interesting result, that teachers gained more confidence in using this. And we hope to find out a lot more. We don't know everything that this might be doing or not doing in a classroom setting. Now, to make this work in education, there's a lot of challenges we have to overcome. This isn't an easy thing to do for education. That's why a lot of the technology that you see created out there today is aimed at consumers, so toys, stuff that you can buy in a toy shop and play with, Lego, for example, because you can focus on the consumer values, right? What you can sell as a fun thing for kids or their parents. Or they're focused on maker and maker pros, so hobbyists. Hobbyists are really enthusiastic, they're quite nerdy, they want to get into the nerdy thing. So Arduino or Raspberry Pi is a great example of that. This is a much harder thing to crack in education because we have many more challenges to deal with. Regulation and curriculum for countries. So can this even be used in a curriculum? We have a lot of attitude issues with older teachers, for example. So there is a range of teachers who are very open to new things and very excited, but there's a range of teachers who aren't. But at the same time, it's very hard to provide something differently into schools. We have to provide common framework and tools. So how do we get teachers interested? And then children as well. How do we find something that children can actually use in the time they have in a class, which might be 45 minutes in a session? How can we do something useful with technology? So we've had to do a lot of optimization in the project, things like ease of use. So we had to do a lot of work to make this, and I'll do a demo for you in a moment, just to make this very, very simple to use. So within 1 or 2 minutes, you have to feel like you were able to make something with this as a child. That's the patience level that we have to deal with to keep them interested. Cost is a real issue. So we're dealing with school budgets that are pretty non-existent in most countries. So trying to do something like this in school, we've had to find ways to make this really cheap. So 15 euros is kind of our sweet spot, that a pack of these for a class shouldn't cost more than one laptop. That's kind of our comparison. Instead of getting one more laptop, we can get a set of these, and we can teach digital creation for kids at the same time. Or we can go to the government and ask for funding to just give them away to schools. Or we can go to the private sector, like we were doing in Finland, and asking for donations to give away devices for schools. So it lets us find many different ways to fund this kind of thing. It'll be interesting in developing countries next year for us. How do we find the funding to do this in developing countries? And of course, nonprofit. I think it's important to do what we're doing for the right reasons. We see a lot of things that are at the boundary of schools and education and government, which are for profit, and it causes a lot of strange conflicts of interest. And so I think doing what we're doing as a nonprofit makes us a lot easier to work with universities, work with governments in the same way that they work with their schools. So our only interest is to actually have an impact on the education. So a lot of things that we've had to think about. And at the same time, we've had to make a device that actually is useful for schoolwork. So not just coding, but we have to do things like have sensors that can be useful in physics lessons, in math lessons, be able to integrate this in music and art. So how do we do that in a little device? Well, we did a lot of work to make sure that, A, the form factor was right. It's small. It fits in the hand of a child, so they can hold this in their hand and make it feel like it's their thing. We made it fun. So the design of this is meant to be rounded. It's meant to be colorful. There's four different colors they can get. My own kids collect colors. It's really interesting, but they're always like, "Dad, you have a new color. I want it." Okay? So they collect the different colors for themselves. It's important for them. And it has a lot of light. So we created a 25 LED matrix instead of doing an OLED display or a dot matrix display, because we wanted to be really clear for children that each of these dots is a separate thing. They have an X and Y axis, right? We can teach them about axes. We can teach them about geometry and variables. We have inputs, so we can actually have some textile input from children. And most importantly for us, we didn't put everything on the device. We very purposely left out a lot of things. And the reason we did that, because we felt it was important to have an experience of building for the children. So not just having everything ready, like in today's apps on mobile phones, actually using alligator clips to connect things to the microbit was a really important part of the education experience. Kids could learn a little bit about circuits. Not a lot. We're not doing electronics here, but a little bit about how energy goes to here, goes through a light, and comes back to ground. We can teach very basic physics concepts with electricity. So we can connect servos to make things work. We can connect motors to turn this into a robot. We have lots of robots. We can use external LEDs to make wearable dresses and things. So a lot of projects are actually putting lights into clothing. Lots of great projects on biking clothing, where people are connecting these into their clothing to put signs for biking. So we had one where the kids did a controller on their bike handle. They pressed a button, and here a sign for right appeared on the back of their jacket. If you press left, a sign for left appeared with big LEDs. A really interesting project using microbit. So connecting things is part of the experience for children. But at the same time, we tried to make sure we inserted a lot of technology on board that's useful out of the box. So we found that through our studies that accelerometers and magnetometers were very, very useful for in-school work. So by being able to study gravity and acceleration, so accelerometers give us g-forces in three axes, we can do a lot of things in physics and math. We can study angles. We can study gravity. We can understand G-forces in things like cars, in rockets that go up in the air. And so it lets us study a lot of different things. Magnetometers let us study magnetic fields and compasses. So we can turn this into a compass and study the strength of magnetic fields. We, at the same time, built in a radio that's very interesting. We can integrate this over Bluetooth with phones, but not in the way you think. This isn't a toy. We integrated this with phones so that children could create control systems for phones. So it works in the way that you program the microbit to control the phone, not the other way around, which is quite interesting. We also use it for data logging. So for science experiments, we want to be able to log data and store it and see what's happening in the environment. So a lot of interesting things that we can do with this. And one of the coolest ones is peer-to-peer radio. So something that we've found works extremely well with children. I tried it this morning, Christoph, with the girls, is our radio that goes peer-to-peer. So we can switch this out of a Bluetooth mode into a peer-to-peer radio mode. We can send a message to anybody in this classroom on the same channel. And kids just love this. They can send a message from their microbit to the next microbit, and then you can send that message to the next. You can make tag games. You can make cooperative sport games using that. We've seen tons of things. Timing gates for car races, anything you can imagine using that peer-to-peer radio. So a lot of great things that we built into this. And let me show you a demo. I think that's the best way to understand how this works. Now, the other thing, I'll tell you in a moment about what we're doing internationally, but we have a lot of language support in microbit. So something that's important for me, speaking two languages, English and Finnish, is that we support lots of languages on this. Let me get this on the screen. Hold on. Yeah. Is that we support a lot of languages in our systems and on the web. This is going to be interesting. I'm going to have to do it. I'll do it this way. And so we have a very easy interface for children to understand locally, even young children who don't speak English, to understand how this works. And we saw it this morning. Secondary age kids did this in English. Primary school kids that were visiting wanted to do it in Finnish. So we tried both. But this is very simple. We go to code this, and we have a really easy web browser which lets us create projects. And this is a project I was doing yesterday, actually. This is a robot. I was doing this with my daughter. It was the last project that I did. This is a controller for a robot where we can actually have a robot control motors when it gets different kinds of radio messages. And we do this with very simple blocks. I'll show you something really basic. Create a project. Where we can really easily say, I put some text here. And you can see it right away on the simulator that's on the screen. And this all works in a web browser. There's nothing to install. For a classroom teacher, that's really important. So there's no issues with, is it a Chromebook or an old laptop or a PC? It doesn't matter. It still works. We can right away get some indication of what this does. So for kids, it's really important they see it works right away when they're programming. And you can very easily do some really advanced things, too. So we can do, for example, moving images. So we can do almost like scrolling. Scrolling images. This is Suomi Sata. and then you'll see my image go across the screen. A little bit like the old Commodore 64, where you can make really simple, fun games. And so we've had children this morning making their own games where they wanted to move a pixel across the screen using our accelerometers. And there's a million things we can do with this. Anything from pretty complex mathematics, logic, radio, music. So we can actually play musical notes and melodies on this by connecting a speaker to it. So you can imagine when kids get this, they really, you know, the sky's the limit. They come up with all kinds of great things they can make with this. And the important thing to realize is that it's doesn't do anything out of the box, right? It really encourages kids to create their own thing, right? Their own idea, their own project, not just some ready-made game that we've created. Now, how many of you know Scratch? Everyone has done some Scratch. So Scratch is an extremely popular online coding platform, so it doesn't do normally physical things like this. Well, recently we've done a collaboration with MIT to access even younger children to integrate Scratch with Microbit. So now we can actually do Scratch programming where Microbit inputs and outputs are part of the Scratch program. So I was in Japan with a professor, and he was doing things with the students of flying the cat. It's always the cat in Scratch, flying the cat through a maze using the Microbit's accelerometers. And that was really interesting for the kids to see Scratch working with a physical device. So that's something we've done to just expand the different applications. And Minecraft. Minecraft is a lot of fun as you get into secondary school. And we've done an integration of Microbit with Minecraft. So you can actually connect the physical world with the virtual world. So it works that this becomes a controller for Minecraft. You can program it to do whatever you want in Minecraft. Many people, they use the accelerometers to navigate through Minecraft. Some of them use the buttons for special things, like, oh, and I want to make a storm of chickens. Don't ask me why you want a storm of chickens, but everything's possible in Minecraft. Press A. Because obviously, that's what A should do, right? And for other people, oh, I need lava, right? Put lava around me, B. Or keeping track of points or things you can do on the screen. So that's been a really interesting combination of Minecraft and Microbit. And we're going to see a lot of things like that. It's an open platform, so people all over the world are connecting things to Microbit. And the number of projects we've seen is absolutely incredible. Everything from sports projects out of Hawaii. This is from Hawaii. Motion and music. I visited your music lab. And the music researchers this morning or around lunchtime. We've had a lot of music projects to robotics. That's a hacked Barbie doll. We had an art group in the UK teach kids how to use their old toys to turn them into robots using Microbit. It's very simple, cheap servos. And they were hacking Barbie dolls, Star Wars figures, making videos out of them. A lot of fun. To even really serious stuff, this is a 1,000-mile-per-hour ground speed record car out of the UK that uses Microbit inside of it to measure G-forces during the runs. So we've turned it into a science experiment within a real thing. So lots of really interesting projects, even to just integrating it with Legos, right? Just fun projects that kids do. And this is something that we're now doing around the world. It's my mission for my team is to really go and bring this to as many different countries and school systems as we can and learn what people want to do with it locally. We don't try to enforce a particular curriculum on any country. It's really open to change the curriculum and the applications. And currently we're doing that in around 50 plus countries. There's 40 countries we're officially in, but there's many more where people have just bought them and are using them. Many of those countries are already nationwide, so the UK, Iceland, Croatia, and Singapore are now all using Microbit nationwide in the school system. Norway, Lithuania, Hong Kong are pretty far along on that journey to be almost nationwide, but grassroots, there's no central coordination, It's just teachers deciding to use this in school. And a lot of languages. So we do 14 languages currently with all of our teaching material and everything. So we always try to localize for any country that we go to, support the local language. Now, being a nonprofit, it's also important for us to do things in a different way. So a lot of the effort that we put in to our programs is to give away microbits wherever we can. I'll talk about the Finnish pilot in a moment, but all around the world, we've been giving away microbits. That's how we use any extra funding that we have. We get donations from sponsors, and we reinvest that into microbit programs around the world. So far, we've given away around 25,000 devices. It's probably up to 30,000 by now in over 50 countries, lots of different projects. This is a big project that we've done in Sri Lanka. We've already reached over 2,000 children with just a grassroots volunteer effort. These are not even teachers. These are just local engineers who wanted to volunteer with their local schools because they felt there was a gap between what kids were learning with technology and what they wanted to do. So they went and started a user group for Microbit, and we sponsored devices for them to do that. And many more stories like that around the world. So what we're seeing is that just by getting some things started, getting people motivated with new technology, we're able to have an interesting impact in many different places. Now, Finland, of course, is important for me, being part Finnish, is that we do things like Microbit in our school system. I think we have one of the best curriculums in the world for integrating technology with different subjects in school, using, I think, pretty innovative teaching methods. But we haven't given Finnish school teachers any of the tools that they need to do that. So just providing a tablet or a Chromebook isn't enough to do anything with learning to create technology in schools. Yes, you learn to consume technology, and that's good, but we also need to teach children how to create things with technology. And that's something we have a lot more we can do in Finland. So we're starting to use Microbit as a tool for that in primary schools and secondary schools. We're not really too picky. We're learning which ones are working best. And we've done that in August by kicking off a 50-school pilot all across Finland. This is where our schools are located, so pretty evenly distributed. Where in the world is Jyväskylä? Is that here? Yeah. Okay, so we do have a school in Jyväskylä. We'll have to check which school. Okay, so we do have one school in Jyväskylä. We have one in Kajaani as well, close to where I'm from. And our goal here is to really get a feeling for how this gets combined with the Finnish curriculum. Of course, the UK curriculum is quite different. It's based on computing, whereas the Finnish curriculum is based on digital technology across many different subject areas, which actually Microbit's better suited for. This isn't really meant for just teaching computing. And we want to get some experience from teachers, feedback, as well as research. How does this work in Finnish schools? What's the actual impact on the children and the teachers? And that's something we hope to learn more about this winter as the pilot progresses. And by the first quarter of next year, we hope to have research results back from the project. Of course, there's much more happening in Finland. This is just the official pilot that we've done. There's probably 10 to 20 more schools all around Finland, several in Jyväskylä because of the university's efforts here. But all over Finland, we have volunteer teachers to help us translate web pages, create curriculum. And they've just bought these for their own class. They said, this is great. I want these. This is the nerdiest end of the teacher spectrum. They just buy them and use them in their class because they think they're cool. So lots of interesting things. Next year, we hope to extend this project to be much bigger. My hope is that we end up doing a project that brings this to every single Finnish school that wants it. For free, my hope is my goal for that. But of course, that's a big challenge. It's a research challenge. It's a training challenge. How do we use our networks of teacher trainers to do that? And it's a professional development challenge for teachers. I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have globally for things like this, how do we give the tools and the support for teachers to do the professional development they need to take on things like this? And it's not an easy one, even in Finland, where we have a fairly sophisticated school system. We have a lot of resources for schools, but still, teachers do not have any resources from their school to get professional development. It's on their own budget. So it's an interesting challenge. How do we actually find ways to train teachers to use things like this when they don't have support from their schools? So we're figuring out new ways to deal with that. But it's an exciting start for Finland. And that's it. That's the story of what we're doing with this cool new technology for education. And for all of you, I think it's best just keep in mind what I want you to take away from this is that we're at the point with technology where you can help. You can be involved in doing this kind of stuff, either helping us do research, applying it in school programs that you're involved with, or just doing volunteer work in your local area. So a lot of what I do in Finland is just volunteer work. I go to schools, I find teachers who are interested to try this out, and I go and visit their class and see how it works. What kind of experience do they have? What kind of experience do the kids have? And I find that to be pretty rewarding as a way to learn about what technology can do in schools. Any questions or discussions? I'm happy with discussions, too.
Can we get one for all our students?
Christoph can probably help.
We only have three.
Oh, only three. Okay. I'm sure we can find some way to borrow, share microbits between different projects.
Because our students are going to be computer science teachers.
Ah. So in the teacher program.
Yeah.
Ah, that's interesting. That's something we haven't done a whole lot of yet. Even in the UK, we haven't really started to access teacher training. It's been more about development for teachers who are already teaching. So that's an interesting new angle. But I think Christoph's your guy here in Jyväskylä for microbits.
Yeah. Have you written a book about
that? I haven't. We have quite a few books now about microbit that are just coming out. So Wiley has a new book coming out next month that's a user guide, how to use this for lots of different things. Yeah. But what we're missing still are teacher books. What's the textbook of how to use this in class? We haven't had anybody do that yet in a textbook format. That could be a really interesting challenge, not just in Finnish, in English too, because we have such a global community around this. How can we share that?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kiitos oikein paljon. Onko tuo kahvila auki, niin mä voisin mennä sinne.